Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Chupp, your host for CMDA Matters, and welcome to our fourth podcast of the year. We've had some great guests this year. Dr. James Dobson, a great legacy interview, kicked us off. Dr. Christopher Ewan talked to us about holy sexuality. And last week, Dr. Andre Van Maal talked to us about the transgender tsunami. Well, my guest today is Dr. Jean Wright. All of these podcasts are available through iTunes or Google Play, also on our CMDA app, or you can listen on our website, cmda.org/CMDA Matters. I'd encourage you to subscribe via iTunes or Google Play so that you won't miss any of these great interviews. Did you know that CMDA has 12 specialty sections? We have groups in family medicine, psychiatry, academic physicians and scientists. We've got a physical rehab section, groups of surgeons, nurse practitioners, dermatology, and many others. This particular part of our campus and community ministry is growing very fast, and in fact, we're preparing to add a new section of Christians in healthcare administration. If you're interested in getting involved in the particular section that involves your specialty, just go to cmda.org/specialty sections and see if you might get connected. Our family medicine section is actually working hard together in advocacy efforts to influence the American Academy of Family Physicians on pro-life and Christian values. You know, CMDA is almost 90 years old, and we are on over 300 campuses across this country, but we still remain, unfortunately, a fairly well-kept secret. I'd like to challenge you to tell your friends about CMDA. Encourage them to become a member and get involved. We really don't put money into advertising CMDA, but I'm requesting your help to encourage others to be a part of this family. If each member recruited just one member, we could double our CMDA membership. And the more members that we have at CMDA, the more that we can do for God's kingdom. I just want to challenge you to recruit one member this year. Well, today's interview, let's get to it. It's fascinating. And both our producer, Rusty Sluter, and I have been eager to get it out to you since we recorded it earlier this month. Our subject is innovation in healthcare as this new decade begins. And my guest is Dr. Jean Wright. She's responsible for leading the advancement of innovation initiatives throughout Atrium Health in Charlotte, North Carolina, as the Chief Innovation Officer. Dr. Wright is a lifetime CMDA member. She's also been one of our trustees in the past, and she's been active with us in advocacy in Washington, D.C. Let's get right to this interview and hear about innovation in healthcare in 2020 from Dr. Wright. Well, I want to welcome to the microphone a longtime friend of CMDA, Dr. Jean Wright. She's served on our board of trustees, and if you look at her CV, her bio, it is very long and has an amazing list of different accomplishments and roles that she has held as a physician leader. She practices as a pediatric anesthesiologist and intensivist. She's been a physician executive at Emory, chair of peds at Mercer, and executive director for Memorial Health Children's and Women's Hospital in Savannah, and was the chief medical officer for Atrium Health in Cabarrus. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
That's right.
Jean, welcome to the program. Wow, it's a great privilege to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, we're going to talk about innovation, and as we were getting introduced a few minutes ago, you were sharing with me that you're actually on the West Coast because your son is having a rather innovative and new procedure, a reconstructive procedure. Just tell our listeners just a little bit about that. I find it fascinating.
The most recent addition to our family is a young man named Isaac. He's 13. He comes from China. And he had bilateral microtia, so small ears on both sides, and no oral canals on either side. So he was hearing impaired because he was blunted in that sensorineural impact that would come in through your tympanic membrane and only had bone conduction hearing. Mm-hmm. But he was very bright. And when we met him, you know, I said, would you like a family? And long and short, everything was stacked against us. I was too old, and I'm still too old. he was almost too old. And, oh, by the way, China had lost all of his papers. So I said to him, I can't promise you that this will happen, but I will try. And 2 days later, China mysteriously found his papers after them being missing for 12 years. And then 11 months later, even though I was still too old, he came home. So his American name is Isaac.
Isaac.
We named him that because Isaac in the Bible had a very old mother. That was the joke.
Well, for our listeners who don't know Dr. Wright, Dr. Wright is a frequent plenary speaker for numerous CMD activities. And I think what everyone appreciates so much about you, Dr. Wright, is your sense of humor. Well, tell us what Isaac just had done.
So he just had a 3D printed ear. He'll need one on both sides. But we came out here and had a marvelous pediatric plastic surgeon use a 3D mold to build the scaffolding of his outer ear. And then she did a flap over it and then took skin from his hip. And when you look at him now, you would think this was the ear he was born with.
Wow, amazing.
He will still need augmented hearing devices, a bone-anchored hearing device behind his ear. But for all intents and purposes, he will look like this is the ear that he was born with. So it's amazing, you know. In fact, my son actually got to sit there and pick out his ear because she had different molds that he could pick out. But if you already have a normal-looking ear, she'll take a scanning device, scan your normal ear, make the mold, and then do the ear flap over that so she can imitate the ears. And she's an amazing physician, surgeon. Her background was actually in architecture at Berkeley and the med school at Stanford, then UCLA for plastic surgery. So she has the art and the science combined.
Well, you may think that Isaac was not blessed with a younger mom, but wow, he was blessed with a connected mom. A chief innovation officer and who takes it home. Thank you for sharing that story, Gene. Yeah. Well, your title is chief innovation officer, and I just would like our listeners to hear a little bit about how you went from being a chief medical officer and executive team to focusing on innovation. Tell us about that transition.
I think it's always been in my background because at Emory, you are a research scientist, so you're grounded in research and discovery. And then when I was at Emory, I went to business school, and two classes were really very life-changing for me. One was a formal course in innovation, and I didn't realize the difference back then of, say, doing research and hypothesis-driven discovery from innovation, which is much more an iterative process. But I learned it there in business school, and I also learned analytics. And both of those would end up being very instrumental in directing the latter part of my career. So as you mentioned, I did come to Atrium Health. Back then it was called Carolinas Healthcare System. Mm-hmm. Because we're in more states now than just the Carolinas, we broadened our name to reflect that. And one of our senior executives saw the need for innovation. And because our main medical schools are actually 2 or 3 hours away in North Carolina, we're not blessed with one right on our campus, she knew that we needed a way to bring innovation into the organization. So shortly after I got to what was then Carolinas, I landed this big grant that had to do with analytics, population health, and three communities. They're in the bedroom communities or suburban rural edge of Charlotte. And that opportunity gave the system a chance to see what I could do if I was given some funding and some degrees of freedom. So we finished that $16 million grant, and they created this Office of Chief Innovation Officer, and I've been in it ever since. And I'm clearly in my happy place. I'm surrounded by incredibly smart millennials. Almost everybody I work with is a millennial, and I try to keep up with them in every way. But it's great to be surrounded by them because they do teach me new ways to think, and they teach me what's on the horizon, and then I help them make their way through the politics, the funding, the silos of being successful in a big matrix system.
I remember when I met you in Montana at the Women Physicians in Christ conference, I think the first time I heard someone saying your title, I thought they said director of destructive innovation, if I'm not mistaken. And they quickly corrected me that it was the director of disruptive innovation. What, tell us about what disruptive innovation looks like at Atrium Health.
Disruptive innovation or disruptive business models actually come from the professor at Harvard Business School, Clay Christensen, who talked about the three waves of innovation. There's the typical where we improve something, and most of our physicians are used to performance improvement or PDSA, plan, do, check, act kinds of approaches. And then there's adjacent innovation where you kind of take one or two steps away from the core, and you do something sort of related, but not too unusual. Disruptive innovation means that the business model of using that new technology is going to fundamentally disrupt or change the underlying business framework. So the example we always use and always teach from is Blockbusters and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And most people, at least in my generation, probably if they dig deep enough in their wallet or purse, still have a Blockbuster card somewhere. And it's only good for memorabilia now, because I think the last store has finally bit the dust. But what was not so radical about going from walking into a store and getting a VHS tape or DVD, that wasn't such a big deal when Netflix first came out. In fact, Blockbuster could have rented DVDs a different way, if you remember.
Yes.
You paid for it, and then you paid late fees. In fact, I'm pretty sure, like, Finding Nemo cost me about $25. Losing Nemo or whatever, because Nemo circulated the back of the family van. And in fact, the late fees were a big part of how they made business.
Yes.
How they made their business work. When Netflix comes along and mails it to your home and charges you a monthly fee. And now they don't overcharge you for those late fees. It was a much more pleasing business model. And now one of the things I love about the example is Netflix keeps reinventing themselves. So they
sure
went to streaming, to now content creation. And, you know, as you know, I'm here in L.A. and I'm seeing these billboards all around Hollywood of programs that are made by Netflix. And, you know, I don't know about your kids or grandkids, but mine don't watch television. They stream everything. That's how they're interacting with the world. So let's take that into healthcare. So most of us were grown up with a per-click way of dealing with healthcare. You go to the doctor, the patient pays a copay or something like that, and it's a per-click RVU-based model. And now we come along, and there are models like One Medical, Iora, Oscar, all sorts of different ways of interacting with the patient. And we keep reminding people it's not so much the technology, but it's changing the business model. It's charging people a monthly fee. And I think many of our members, even 10, 15 years ago, began to look at the direct-to-consumer model mm-hmm. and opted out of Medicare. And they were on the cutting edge, maybe sometimes even the bleeding edge of healthcare. A lot of people were scornful and thought that that wouldn't survive. But lo and behold, not only is it surviving, it's thriving. And those business models are the things that disrupt. So I don't go around purposely trying to disrupt things. Although I just read that a healthcare system out of Renton, Washington, just yesterday I read that they were planning on disrupting every way that they interact with patients and redesigning their system around the patient. So instead of the classic ways of thinking about the hospital, the ambulatory units, the ER, the urgent care, they were now really beginning to reshape their system around the patient. So, you know, kudos to them for doing that. There's a few that are on that edge of trying to do that, but it's so hard. You know, I've always been in big system medicine. And when 70% of the revenue for the system comes from those expensive procedures that are done in the big hospital, it's really hard to pivot and think about those access points and how the patient likes to get care. And, like, you know, I'll go back to our opening story. I've had an incredible experience out here. We had a 10-hour procedure in a surgery center that's a focus factory that only does this. This surgeon has done 1,000 cases. She does 100 a year. They have everything down. The patient interaction, where the family stays during the procedure, is designed around them. And then the other 13 days we spent in a inexpensive hotel.
And you had mentioned he would have needed 8 different procedures before if it wasn't for this. And so
yes.
Highly desirable for the patient and family.
Right. And in fact, offices like that can now make the argument to their insurer, which they did to ours, and said, look, you know, not only is it a better outcome, you know, here's how much you, the payer, will save. And so gratefully, my insurance company said, we will pay it as if it's in-network. We'll cover it that way because it's so much better.
Tremendous
so
win.
We're seeing those kinds of shifts. And I know we have a lot of clinicians in CMDA who don't necessarily keep their heads in the business of medicine. But this whole issue of how the business model is changing is going to drive a lot of the changes that most of us will have to live with in the future.
Well, many of our listeners may very well be working with CIOs or chief innovation officers in their institutions. Their practices, but would you say that Atrium Health is the norm or maybe the exception to have someone with your level of experience leading such a team?
I don't think we're the norm, but we're not so rare anymore. So I would say many of the big systems now have this, even if they have strong research capabilities, because many times researchers are focused on that next grant or what their train of interest is, rather than what the system overall needs. So take, for example, in our group, we study trends. I like to say that all those years I hung out with Dick Swenson rubbed off on me.
Yes, the futurist.
Yes, I'll never be the futurist that he is. I think I'm the next step. So you see the future, so what ist? But I don't think that title will catch on. But I tend to look at the future and then say, well, then, in light of that, what do we need to do? So we've been studying the increasing number of people that have memory care issues, Alzheimer's, mild cognitive impairment. And it is scaling so fast, our systems can't keep up with it. In fact, we often use a picture of a huge, like, baseball or football stadium and say, if all these seats were filled, this represents all the people, say, in the Charlotte market that have a diagnosis today of a memory disorder. And then we show 2 of those stadiums next to each other and say, and here in the next, like, 10 years is what it's going to look like. Well, of course, that drives the point home. And then we take it one step further and say, pretend there was only one door, or worse yet, only one bathroom in one of those stadiums. And right now in Charlotte, we only have 1 geriatrician, and we don't have a focused area for patients with Alzheimer's. It's kind of fallen between the cracks. It's part primary care, it's part neurology, it's part nothing, because so much of what those patients need is really what their caregiver needs. So we've been helping the system design what should that caregiver platform be like? How could we pick up patients who don't realize they have memory issues or their family hasn't appreciated it yet, whether they're coming in to have their hip or knee replaced or they're coming to a primary care visit. So we tend to look at those trends like Dick would, and then we try to build around that and build for that. And that may be stuff that we build ourselves. Like when we saw the need for mental health services, we built a whole system around virtual behavioral health where we can identify people in primary care. But there may be other things where we partner. For example, I'm partnering with a startup company out of Canada that has a tablet that allows me to screen for memory care issues in that pre-op visit for their hip and knee replacement. That way, when the patient comes to the hospital, we know, this is somebody that's probably not going to follow the instructions or probably going to need more caregiver support at the time of discharge. And as you well know, patients barely stay in the hospital these days. So in the past, we had the luxury of a couple of days of teaching or interacting with the family. Most of our hip and knee patients either go home the same day or the next day. And so that opportunity to teach is now missed.
Yes.
And frankly, I don't ever think it was really a great opportunity, because even as a doctor mom, like in the moment I'm thinking about, is my family member in pain? And, you know, how do I get the car to the, you know, to pick him up in the wheelchair, instead of really listening to what people are telling me to do. So we try to build for those futures and for those trends that we see.
So Cross Atrium Health, would you say the medical staff in general, now that they know who you are and what you're up to, which is a little bit about disruption, are you a popular person or are you someone that people, I'm just wondering what happens when you show up at a medical staff meeting? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it was funny. The first year I had the job, the senior leadership said, you're not allowed to use the word disruption for a year, because it's too disruptive.
Mm-hmm.
They were really afraid about, you know, the change that would come. So we called it transformative, made it a PC term. We were talking about transformative change. By the end of the first year, that same senior team said to me, every time you walk in a room, we want people to go, oh no, she's here. She's going to disrupt us. Now, as you've already indicated, if I do that in a way that is unnerving to people, they'll never invite me back to the party.
Mm-hmm.
And you already commented, I think before we started the program, about a picture that we use at our organization of my team, and it looks like we're in the Himalayas. And actually, we refer to ourselves as Sherpas.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we do that is we think Sherpa reflects someone who's wise, somebody who has scaled difficult mountains in the past, lived to tell the story, and has tools and equipment to help other people scale who may be not as experienced in scaling. And when we do that, there is a humility, I think, that also comes with it. So I can go in and talk to the chief of neurosurgery or the head of orthopedics, and I don't have to know everything about what they do. In fact, I don't know most of what they do. But I do know innovation, and I do know change management. And if I come in as a Sherpa and say, I can help you build, you know, behavioral health for the future, or I can help you build, you know, a new orthopedic experience for hip and knee patients, then we're welcomed. And that's one of the things we've really tried to do. We want people to invite us to the party. Now, we are a corporate resource, so we're allocated. It's not like, you know, everybody just calls us up and says, can you come to our group? But it's been interesting. As we work with different groups, they'll call us back and say, look, you worked with us in the pediatric ER. Can you come back and help us with this or that? And so we'll prioritize it against, you know, the corporate list of projects that we need to work on. But you're exactly right. There could be people that go, ah, she's here. And I'm sure there's a couple of physicians that may actually have my picture on a dartboard somewhere. But we really have tried to neutralize that. And we're also strategic. There's 10 people on my team. We all have different skills. I'm the only clinician, but I have business development people. I have an artist. I have people really great at project management. I have somebody that was in IT. So we also divide and conquer and send people into different areas where we think they'll be more effective.
Well, when you did our CMDA Board of Trustees training, you asked the board a very curious question. What is a job? And what's the value of understanding the job? Tell our listeners about this whole issue of a job.
This was one of those theories that really resonated with us. The theory is called Jobs to be Done. Again, it comes out of Harvard Business School. And if our listeners go online, look at the YouTube video, it usually is an explanation of people buying milkshakes. And you would not expect, but about 40% of milkshakes are bought between 6 and 10 a.m. in the morning. Why would somebody do that? Well, they were essentially hiring that milkshake to help accomplish a job, which was fill me up, don't make a mess in my car, don't break apart like a donut or biscuit, and yet keep me satisfied through the morning and give me something to kind of fidget with in my hands in a long commute.
Mm.
That framework has really helped us think about why do people both hire and fire different aspects of healthcare. I may have shared the example that when my daughter was competing as a competitive cheerleader years ago, a sport that I'm not in favor of. It takes you right to the concussion protocol. But she called me on a Friday afternoon. She was across town. She said, I have a sore throat, and we're supposed to go, I think it was to Gatlinburg the next day to compete. So what goes through Dr. Mom's mind is, I wonder if she has strep. If she does, she probably needs to be started on antibiotics, and maybe we shouldn't go to that meet tomorrow. I did not send her to her lifelong pediatrician who has a chronologic and continuous record. I did not send her to one of our own urgent care centers. I sent her to a CVS MinuteClinic. What was I hiring? I was hiring a strep test, essentially. And I knew what I needed, and I needed to get back to life, back to what we were trying to do. Well, we've used that kind of mindset to think about how do people engage with most of our services. And the reality is most people don't wake up in the morning saying, I think I want a continuous relationship with my primary care physician. Right. But jobs to be done is when you design to really meet the job in that person's life. Just like the surgeon we've gone to out here has designed this whole experience around getting the best outcome. She has the same surgeons, the same anesthesiologist. In fact, when we were scheduling the next surgery, which will be his second ear in about 3 months, she said, oh, we can't do it on this date. My lead nurse is off that day, and I will not do a 10-hour operation without my lead nurse. And she knows the reason we've come this far and paid what we have to pay out of pocket is to get the best result. Yes. And so, you know, everything is designed towards that.
Well, Dr. Wright, thank you for taking time out from Los Angeles. And we pray for an awesome continued recovery for Isaac and for some time for you to get maybe some projects done that you wouldn't be getting done if you were in Charlotte. I hope that it will not be long before we can invite you back to share with our members, with our listeners. God bless you.
Thank you so much, and God bless you as well.
Well, I never could have planned the timing of interviewing Dr. Wright while she was in Los Angeles having that innovative plastic surgery procedure for her son, but the timing was just so perfect. Changes have come to medicine, and they'll continue to come in this decade. And I don't know if you have a chief innovation officer where you practice in your institution or in your clinic, but change and new things are even scriptural. The Lord said in Isaiah, see, I'm doing a new thing. Even now it springs up. Don't you perceive it? I'm making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. We serve an innovative and creative Heavenly Father. Well, unfortunately, there seem to always be new threats to our conscience protections for medical professionals of faith. We've recognized recently CMDA member Dr. Regina Frost, who's given testimony on the new HHS conscience rule that will help enforce federal conscience protection laws in healthcare from the past. The rule that was written last year was recently challenged by several states and the abortion industry. We've intervened to join with the federal government in defending that rule. Although the government and CMDA, we lost the first round together with Dr. Frost, we are now appealing and would definitely appreciate your prayers in coming months. We're close to a month away from the Rite of Conscience and Cultural Change in Medicine day-long conference at Northwest Bible Church in Dallas, Texas. The conference speakers will address the medical, legal, and theological perspectives on Rite of Conscience. You can go to cmda.org/ROC event. That stands for Rite of Conscience event. We've got a great lineup of speakers, and I hope to see you there February 29th next month. Our CMDA Board of Trustees has discussed the importance of healthcare innovation, and I trust this interview has been beneficial to each one of you who've listened. In fact, our Board of Trustees meets 3 times a year, and this weekend we will be meeting in Houston, Texas. Our board is a very invested volunteer group. They give a lot of their time and resources to CMDA to help us be a better organization to ultimately glorify God as we serve you. So I would like to close by asking you to pray for our board and the meeting this weekend. Well, until next week, I trust that you will see God at work in your practice, in your home, and in your walk with Him. Thanks for listening to CMDA Matters, and we'll see you next week.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.